Well, this is my mom, Nelly.
Yay, yay.
Say, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to my daughter, what?
Podcast.
Podcast. Okay.
Podcast. I know, podcast. That's a weird name.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Find the Funny with Lisa Alvarado. I am so excited about my guest today. It is Nick Hoff. He is a great comedian. I have known you how many years?
Probably 14.
I was thinking like about 15 that? Years.
Yeah.
And we were baby comedians when we met. Where did we meet at a venue? At a comedy venue?
I think the first time I met you was at our church, actually.
So you did go to...
Yes.
Where did we go?
Oasis, right?
Yeah. Oasis.
I was at Oasis for probably a year.
Yeah.
Year and a half. Yeah.
Yes. Did we do a comedy show? Because I used to
There was a comedy show there. I can't remember if you were there as well for that one. But there was a comedy show in their little cafe there right next to Oasis.
Yeah, that's the one I produced.
Yeah, which I was there. I was terrible.
Did you go to it?
I was on it.
You were? Okay.
I was on it.
Yeah.
And I remember Angela Johnson was sitting in the audience watching it. And I was like, well, she should be up here. Not me. I'm an idiot.
Well, no, I mean, that's before she started stand up. And then she started.
No, because
stand-up.
I knew who she was. So I had to have already have seen the nail salon.
Oh, but you know, she started because of church at Oasis.
Is that right?
In my class.
Really? Yeah. You could have done it.
I should have just taught myself what I taught her and maybe I'd be famous.
I know so many stories like that of like big name comics now that started in a comedy class.
Yes.
And that you look, the teacher always has that look on their face like, oh man, it was in me.
But
somehow I poured it out.
Why did I give her all the gifts? Yeah, it wasn't too fun after that because she became, it's good for her. But for me, she was the younger version of me.
Right.
So,
I look at people like that now and I go, oh, dang it.
Yes,
they're so full of life and look at me just
like
clinging.
They have hopes and dreams. And I mean, you have small children, so.
Yeah, so I'm bringing other people down with me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That must be, okay, so you are the man of the house. I've never thought of this. As the man of the house making a living for your family off stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Is that not terrifying?
So it is and it isn't. I think for most people it would be because you don't know where your next paycheck is going to come from.
Right.
And you have, I always say with stand-ups, we have a very high ceiling and a very low floor. Like the floor is on the ground. The floor,
is the floor
like
is you're
six
mopping
feet
the floor.
Underground.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've slept on many floors.
Yes.
And, but there's something about that that gives me comfort, like possibility. Like this doesn't have to be where it ended. Whereas if I had a regular job where I was like, oh, I know I'm making X amount per month. I think most people find comfort in that. And to me, that would feel like something I couldn't beat my way through with hard work. So that is terrifying to me to be settled on something. So it's a little bit different now that I have kids. Like, I'm bringing somebody else along and hopefully I don't screw up the whole deal.
Right.
But it's going all right now. So,
I mean, you've been doing great and you're doing a tour across America.
Yeah. The All American Comedy Tour hitting all 50 states.
And you take your family with you.
They're coming. They come with me every summer because they get out of school and my wife's a teacher. So they come along and it's always just been fun ever since my first one was, I think he was 6 months old when we first put him in the car seat in the back and said, all right, you're a circus baby now. And they come along.
Wow. Do they actually watch the shows?
Not often. Really. A couple every year they'll get to see where they can stand in back or behind stage or something and watch it. But for the most part, they're just, steel cage death match with my wife in some hotel room.
And she's like, I hate him.
Yeah, I'm fielding hate texts from her like, what have you done?
It's just like, this is your dream. This is not my dream.
Sorry, I'm drinking on the job. Leave me alone.
Oh, my gosh. You got a good woman right there.
She's pretty good. She's pretty good. Although she does let me hear about it.
Yeah.
So I'm very well aware of how good she is.
I'm very well aware of how good she is. That's so perfect. Any good woman's going to be like, did you know I did this?
Let us hear it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So tell me how you started with the idea of touring across the country like that.
So it was for this year's tour, I just kind of was on this amorphous, is that a word? I'm not sure.
No.
Feels like it is. Amorphous,
it's
fact
close.
Check.
Yeah.
It felt like this never-ending tour where I was just constantly on the road and nothing felt cohesive about it. It was just going, from year to year. And so I was like, I wanted something to feel like, okay, bookended. Here's this, and I'm developing this material, and then it will end at this certain point. So I was like, okay, well, a year, like I've been developing this material for the last 2 years, but this year will be like finalizing it and finding the last couple puzzle pieces, and I'll film something at the end in the final state. And so the idea came, well, there are three states I haven't done, and Delaware, Hawaii, and Alaska. And I was like, let me make sure I cross those off the list. And I might as well hit them all, because people are always like, when are you coming to Pennsylvania?
Yeah, yeah.
When are you doing Wisconsin? Yes. And I'm like, I don't know. Now I say, it's this year.
Yeah.
So it's good. Yeah. You know, you may not be in that town, but I'm coming to your state. Yeah. Meet me halfway. Here
right,
I am.
Right. Exactly. Drive 4 hours.
Just whatever it is. Yeah. And some states are small. You know, I'm only a half hour down the road, but I'm coming to your state. So I don't want to hear it like it's going to happen this year. And of course, already I've gotten people, when are you coming to Michigan? I was like, I was there.
I was just there.
I was just
where,
there last
where
month.
Were you?
Where? Come on. Follow my posts on social media more often.
That's awesome. And so you're right. You're working on a whole new hour, because didn't you just tape a special?
It feels like I just taped, but I taped in the summer of 2021. And so ever since then I've been starting, and I think it takes 3 years to build an hour.
I think so. A good hour?
A good
yes.
hour. People can yeah. pump them out faster could, and they're yep. fine.
Yeah.
But I think to get a great hour, I think it needs to be 3 years of development. And so this one will be 2.5. So I'm undercutting myself a little bit, but, yeah, it's getting to the point where like the hour is pretty much there. Needs to still some new jokes are coming in and a little pruning here and there, but I'm about ready. And so it's fun to tour, and so everybody gets to see it before I tape it.
That's good, because they won't want to tune in because they know the jokes.
They'll be like, seen it already? Are you doing the same crap?
I'm like, wait a minute, that's like. That's our enemy, is them knowing the punchline. But if they like you, they'll tune in and be like, I was at that show. I remember when he did this joke this way. That's the fun part.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's fun, because I remember seeing George Carlin in college and then mm-hmm. getting to see the special that he yeah. recorded, you know, 11 yeah. months later. And that yeah. was fun to be like, yeah. I remember this. Oh, this just changed this way.
Yeah.
So
did you get rid of all of the material from the first one? Because here's the thing about yeah. me. I'm taping a special and I'm torn, because there's a couple jokes I've done on other shows or that have
sure.
been on TV or whatever. And I'm like, oh, it's so much better now. Yeah. I have all these other tags now. So the first joke, yeah, that's the same, but this is different.
Do it again.
I think do it again.
Yeah. If it's changed and people kind of like seeing that process yeah. now more than ever because of podcasts, people
right.
are hip to what's going on. They know right. kind of how the sausage is made. So I think people kind of like seeing that. Oh,
right.
look how it's developed. Look how much better it's gotten.
Right.
I remember when it was this.
Right.
As long as it doesn't get worse. Because I remember seeing a comic.
That's true.
I remember seeing a comic who I thought his joke was so funny. And then I saw him do it live like a year later. I was like, hey, you cut the whole part about the thing.
The thing,
and
yeah.
I was like, what'd you do?
Yeah. That helps me, because I'm like, oh my gosh, every single joke has to be completely, can't even like skim. You know how one joke will lead into another, but
yeah.
you've done just the one joke because you had a shorter set.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, but that goes so good to set this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm crafting out the set, I'm trying to decide also between two different jokes to close on.
Right, right.
Because and you're taping two shows. Did you tape two?
I did, yes.
Okay. That's so much better.
You got
to say
too.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you crazy with Chris Rock? And he screwed up
yeah.
a line
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
Like a small thing, but I'm sure it bugs him. I'm sure it yeah. bugged him in the moment.
Yeah.
That he screwed it up. Like it's something to like, and then do well on that first show. So, you know, the second one, you can be loose and kind of play a little bit more and throw some more things in there. When I did it, the first one I felt good about. So the second one, I was like, oh, let me do these other things that I've been working on, or maybe this old joke that exists nowhere, but I might as well just do it, because who knows? It might fit in there. It could be some
yeah.
behind the scenes, some, you know, bonus footage, whatever it is.
And what did you end up using more of? The second show or the first
show? No, the first show was still the meat and potatoes. It was still, I would say, 85% that first show.
Okay.
Because also the second show, the crowd's a little drunker. I got a couple woo people.
Oh.
And even though the responses were great, I could hear that one person just kind of, whoa! And you're just like, oh, I can't have that be through the whole special.
Oh my gosh. Or the groaners. Like sometimes I just did your show groaners. And they're, that's their version of laughing.
Yeah.
Oh.
They don't know how to be a person.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to strangulate you. Laugh or shut up. Those are your options.
Yeah.
Laugh, shut up. Take a drink. If you're going to groan, just put a bottle in your mouth.
By the way, that's the job of your opener. Whoever opens for your special is going to set the table. And I like the idea of them giving a few like pointers like this is cool. I remember the guy that did it for me when I cut my first album said he's taping us an album tonight. So it's really cool. You're going to be able to hear your laugh on the thing. So make sure you're not covering it up. Like make sure you laugh when it's time to laugh. Don't like cover your mouth, whatever people are used to doing.
Right.
And I thought that was really cool of him. I didn't even tell him to say that, but I was like, wow, that guy is really helping me out.
Yes.
Set the table nicely.
Exactly. And did you guys do like crowd reaction shots outside of your set?
So that we did when the opener was on, they like repositioned two of the cameras to get the audience because, you know, on our budget, we don't have a million cameras to just disperse everywhere. So I think mine was I had five cameras. I had four static in the back, like one in each wing and then two in the back, one that like followed me and one that was just kind of an overall.
Right.
And then I had a roamer. But yeah, I think they brought two of those cameras up and recorded some like facial expressions from people and things like that.
Yeah, that helps so much. I taped a special, I don't know, when did we tape it? Like 12 years ago?
Something like that.
I learned so much. I only taped one set.
Yeah.
So my intro was messed up. I had to redo that, have a VO put in. Like there was so much that it was because I didn't have the money to...
Yeah.
And the venue was enormous. I don't know what I was thinking. I couldn't fill it twice. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't fill it twice. And it was huge ceilings. And here I am thinking, oh, it's this massive. Well, you can't hear the laughter.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't have enough mics in the audience, you can't hear the laughter. So there's so many things that I learned doing it wrong and like just kind of stumbling upon how to produce a special that now I'm like, so excited to do this one, even though I know there will be mess ups and then I'll be like, oh, I got to do that next time. But this time I'm so much more prepared.
Right, right. Well, we learn those things and we have to learn them from our peers as well. I remember before I filmed, I called five different people that had released a special like within the last year and just kind of picked their brain like what am I doing? What do I need? What is really necessary? Suggestions, all that.
Yeah.
And I thanked all those people in the credits because I was like, that was invaluable to sit there and have them coach me through it before I screwed it up myself.
And did you know that you were going to put it on YouTube or what was your goal? Did you try shopping it first?
No, we did not try shopping it. The idea was always YouTube is like the backstop. And it was kind of an intriguing proposition because I knew other people had put things on like Tubi and things like that and Amazon. Yeah. But at a certain point, I think a lot of comics are realizing this, you want to work on building your own brand.
Yeah.
And when you put them on those platforms, it's cool because it looks great for you, but it's not really building into your own brand. It's like when you sell tickets at a comedy club and the comedy club owns all the contacts of the audience. You know, they sold them the ticket online. So they got their email address, their phone number. The comedian doesn't get that. Even though they came to your show, enjoyed you. Now, if I want to go back to that club or to another club in that place, or just to let them know that I have a special, I can't reach that audience. So putting it on YouTube is building your own brand. I think that's very smart for comedians to realize, hey, there's this platform out here that's amazing that everybody has access to. Why not take advantage of that and build ourselves?
Exactly. There's big name comics like Ari Shaffir.
Yeah.
Like there's a that just taped and went straight to YouTube.
Yeah.
Matt Rife is killing it.
Matt Rife.
It, on YouTube. Like it just, Angela Johnson just put out a special on YouTube.
Right. Yeah.
I just went straight to YouTube. These are the people that would get their Comedy Central, HBO, Netflix. People that have Netflix specials are now just going straight to you. So we're going straight to you guys.
That's right.
Yeah.
Here we come.
Yeah.
Yeah. My special just went over 100,000 views. And I was really proud of that.
Yay.
And my wife goes, is that good? Is that like, what are other people going? I go, well, let me show you. And I typed in comedy special full. And the first one that came up was Andrew Schultz that has 16 million. I was like, well, I mean.
Well, not only is he hilarious, but he is edgy.
He's edgy and he's a good business mind.
Yes.
He's funny and he's great at the business side.
Yes.
Like so many comics don't have that combo.
They're both sides.
We both know good people on the business side that are garbage comedians.
Yes.
But they're still doing well.
And they're crushing.
And you're like, what? Why?
That joke is 14 years old. How is it that they have a million viewers?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's people like that. And people now that are making it on TikTok, which is insane. I don't know if TikTok translates to ticket sales as much as YouTube does, though. I think those clips and still Facebook, the clips get a lot of views.
Right. I don't ever post anything just to Facebook. I don't know if that's a problem or not.
I don't know. It's not as trendy as it was, but do you do Instagram?
I like Instagram reels. I like those. Yeah. And YouTube shorts. I think YouTube are the most savvy customers. Like those are the places where you're finding the comedy fans.
Yeah.
Like Instagram, you're getting the, you know, gradual people.
Yeah.
But like even the last reel I posted, I was looking at it and I was looking at the insights and it's like, 2,000 people have shared this, but it only gained you 25 followers. You're like, well, why are people sharing this, but not following? So it's something, there's something that I'm doing wrong to not trigger them to like, well, let's see what else he has.
Are you monetizing yet?
No.
On YouTube?
No.
Yeah, because you
on
have
YouTube
to have,
I am. Okay. Not so, on Instagram or Facebook.
Okay, so you have to get to 1,000 subscribers. They have to subscribe, not just like your video.
So you hear that? You better
up.
Be subscribed to this. If you're watching it, subscribe. What are you doing?
Yes.
Comment too.
Subscribe.
Yeah, comment.
Lisa
too.
Alvarado, comedian. And share this stuff. Share it with your mom that doesn't even have an account. It doesn't, it matters. The numbers.
Yeah.
So, and then you have to have this year in a year, 4,000 hours.
Right.
And if you're doing shorts, that's a lot.
Well, yeah. And I'm not even sure shorts count toward that.
Oh,
at least when I monetized, it didn't. But that was the nice thing about the special because
you're
putting all of a sudden, mine was an hour and 9 minutes. And all of a sudden you're putting that much out there and it gained traction. I got that monetization fairly quickly.
Oh, good.
Met those thresholds. So that was good.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And so now the deck is, you know, set up for the next time too.
Oh, good. All right. So we said that we did meet at church.
Okay.
Yeah. You remember that
part? Yep. I remember 10 minutes
so
ago.
So this is, okay. I wanted to ask you about this because there's not that many comedians that are also Christians.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't know or even believe that I'm a Christian.
Right, yeah.
Because of my filthy mouth on stage. And has that changed your act at all? Or are you just generally who you are in normal life?
Sure. So I think it definitely has some impact. There are certain things that I probably won't say on stage, you know, unless I'm backed into a corner. I feel like I have to succeed in the moment.
Yeah.
But there are things that I probably won't say on stage. I've written jokes where I'm like, well, this doesn't fit. And I probably would not say this out loud to another human being and definitely wouldn't repeat on a podcast.
Wow,
and people get it confused because then they see, oh, he's Christian. He's a Christian comedian. But there's a big difference between a Christian comedian and a comedian who's a Christian.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure is where you make your distinction as well.
Yeah.
So there are ways we operate within the business that I feel like we can still make a positive impact in the way that we behave, the way that we act. But that at the same time, like we're not above some crude humor or saying something crazy or even being a part of like a nightlife. You know, some Christians would look down on just us being around certain venues.
Yes.
I remember I did a show in Michigan. So Michigan, sorry, the show's already done this year.
Yep.
But I did a couple shows in Michigan. The last one I did, I knew the booker said, hey, it's going to be like a cleaner show. He said cleaner.
Yeah.
Which you don't know what that means.
You don't
what
have
is cleaner?
Any idea what that means.
Because I'm cleaner than a lot of comedians.
Yeah, you are.
But you never know. And so I went into the green room and I was asking the gal who was running the show. I said, how clean do you want it? Because they said cleaner. And she goes, you know what? Thanks for asking, because last year we had a gentleman who said he was squeaky clean, and then he started talking about divorce, and we were like, oh, my. And I was like, oh, my.
Oh, they would hate me.
So glad I asked.
That was my dry bar experience. You're going to talk about divorce? Because dry bar is Mormons run it.
Yeah.
Utah.
Clean comedy.
Yeah. So what did you say to that?
Oh, it opened my eyes. I realized, okay, we're going to reel it in. Reel it in. Because, I walked out there and there are kids out in the theater. And you go, okay, it's this. Which is fine. It's not ideal. It's not my sweet spot. But, You can do it. You just do more crowd work.
Yeah, I know. How old are you, buddy? Yeah. Should you be here?
Let's make your dad say the things I can't say.
Do you ever talk about your faith on stage?
I have. I don't often make a habit of it, but I have a couple jokes where I say, listen, I'm a Christian. This is what I believe. And usually it's to make fun of it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it is ripe for the pickings. Like, I understand why a lot of comedians are atheists or agnostic. You, like, see it. It's ridiculous. So I think saying I believe in something and then making fun of it at the same time, you know, hopefully that's okay. But I brought it up a few times.
Okay.
Do you have jokes about it?
I sometimes... The funny thing is I have this hat. I don't know if you know that I sell this merch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which it says, and this basically, it says Christian AF. And it encapsulates me, my whole personality,
right,
my faith. Because I just feel like the comics that profess be clean, do this, like the Cosbys of the world.
Right, right.
Don't do this or you're going to burn, or, oh, how could you say that word? I'm almost the opposite. We're off stage. My life is a lot cleaner.
Right, right.
But when I get up on stage, I'll talk about sex. I'll talk about not liking my kid. And that's just a real emotion. And I feel like sometimes as Christians, people say, well, don't say this, or don't mention divorce. Don't mention, well,
right,
I've been divorced. I just think that truth is so much more interesting. And that is why I need God. It's because of all of these things that I think. It doesn't mean that I do them, but I do believe a lot of the stuff that I say. I'm like,
right,
yeah, I do feel that way if I had a boyfriend or if I had this. And we're so extreme sometimes as Christians that the judgment, even against one another, mm-hmm, it's just not inviting. I'm like, that's not really who God made us to be. Like, why are we pointing all these fingers? Just let the person live and you do the best you can do.
Right, right. It always bums me out when people will, like, see something that a Christian did that's bad and then, like,
yes,
make it about all Christianity.
Yes.
And you go, well, take it easy.
Yeah.
Like, that's not everybody. And that's why I never want to be this holier than thou person, because I'm going to let somebody down.
Yes.
I'm going to screw it up at some point, and I don't ever want to feel like I'm being hypocritical. And people often forget. I find the same thing when people talk about when you do, like, a show for older people and they say, keep it clean. These are older folks.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, well, they're a little more conservative, but let's not forget, like, these people have been to war. These people made us.
Yes.
They invented the sex positions we do. Like, let's not think that these people, like, can't handle it, you know, and people forget the Bible is bloody.
It's the
horrific things that happen in the Bible. Like, we're not above a lot of this stuff. So being real and talking about real life, I think that's only therapeutic for people. And if they see behind the scenes that, oh, by the way, she's also a Christian, I think that's like, oh, well, then I'm not so far from that.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like there's opportunity there.
Right. And I think actually your actions speak louder. Because if I got up on stage and I was super clean and whatever else, and then I did something completely different off stage, that to me is more hypocritical.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go up there, I'll drop an F-bomb, or I'll talk about dating or things that might be edgy in the Christian realm. But then when I leave the stage, I'm not sleeping around with dudes.
Right.
I'm not going home with the bar staff. I'm not doing drugs or coke in the bathroom. I'm not, you know, none of those things are happening. I usually go eat and hang a little bit and go to my room.
Yeah.
So, like, my lifestyle shows my faith better than probably what I'm saying on stage.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that people can come up to me after and they're like, oh, you're a believer.
It
cracks me up that people are like, I'm like, yeah, I love God. Do people come out knowing he's a clean comedian, or do you think there's some that come out and go, oh, he's a Christian guy and I'm going to bring my family?
No, I don't think anybody says, oh, I think he's a Christian guy. But I several times.
Nobody.
But many times people was like, you know what I liked? I liked that you were clean.
Yeah.
And even though I think I'm PG-13, like, I'm talking about things and I say a few words.
Yeah.
But it comes out, like, I think people's perception of stand-up is, you know, Def Comedy Jam, something like somehow that right. was instilled right. that it was this dirty thing. And right. so when you're a little below that, people go, well, look at you.
Exactly. You
little whippersnapper, huh?
And at times I do ships. And mm-hmm. the thing about ships that's really hard is no matter what you are, cleaner side or dirtier side, mm-hmm. you have to have both.
Yeah.
There will be children in some of your shows. Mm-hmm. They will be PG. And PG to some parents is still PG-13 or rated R.
Right.
Like,
right.
I mean, I've done some of the mildest jokes. And then the parents come up to you and I'm like, don't bring your child into comedy shows.
Yeah.
Like, what? Go take them to see a juggler. Mm-hmm. Like, just because they're children there doesn't mean I'm going to talk about Legos for them.
And- exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I always said it was like something that a kid can hear.
Yeah.
But he's not going to relate to this. Like,
yeah.
Do they even get sarcasm at a certain point? So right. I did a ship earlier this year. I did my first one.
Really?
And yeah, you got to fit into all those holes.
Oh, so man.
We had yep. four different levels that we had to do. We had a G show, a PG show, a PG-13, and an R show.
What?
And I was like, what are we doing?
Oh my gosh. That would have been sheer torture because what do you... Oh, this might go, if I clean this up, it'll go into the G instead of the PG? What?
I mean, there were a few things that I said where I was like, okay,
yeah,
we'll
yeah.
see. We'll see.
I don't think I could, I might be able to pull off 10 minutes of a
If you can do PG, G. you can do G. It's the same.
There's this thing with the cruise ship passengers where I feel like they just think that they can say shitty things about every show.
Yeah.
I don't know if you experienced that at all, but I literally got a complaint from a passenger on a cruise ship where a cruise director pulled me aside and said, you got this complaint today. And I go, oh boy. And they go, yeah. They said, you didn't move around on stage enough.
Oh my God.
Because they were behind a pole.
Oh.
And they couldn't. And I go, get there earlier? Oh.
Yeah.
Can how is you that hear your the jokes? Fault?
There's
yes.
a pole in
There's
the
a
way.
Pole.
I didn't build the ship.
Oh my God. I was like, you entertained this? You didn't tell them to just like,
yeah.
like go up to the Lido deck and just see what the water feels like, buddy. You know what? I was like amazed that they actually these are the things you don't need to tell me.
Right, right.
Like if I was
hopefully the crew, did the cruise director have a sense of humor about it?
I mean, kind of. But
or was
I
it like,
was
Lisa,
like,
move?
Did yeah. And the crazy thing is, I do walk quite a bit
yeah.
on the stage, and I was like, what about the comics that the mic is like in the stand?
Right,
this person
exactly.
would have killed themselves.
Yeah, I can't see anything. You know what? I as the comedian on the ship, I was hanging out with one of the other comics. Well, just the only other comic.
Yeah.
And then we made friends with the magician.
Yeah.
And he does like 40 weeks a year on ships. He just bounces from ship to ship.
Yeah.
And he said to us, he goes, you know, some people on these cruise ships, that's how they get things is they've learned if they complain, they're going to get something for free.
Yes.
And so no matter what happens, he's like, somebody will always complain about something.
Yeah.
And he has a line in his act. We went to see his magic show one night. He has a line in his act where he talks about the complainers.
Yeah.
And he kind of makes fun of them. And he was like, oh, yeah, this is a guy that lives this life.
Yeah.
And is just sick, sick of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to me. But that kind of stuff doesn't happen at a comedy club because they pay for the show. They make a choice to be
yes.
there.
Yeah.
On a cruise ship. They just there and you happen to be the entertainment.
It's the same as the free roll that they picked up at the buffet.
Yeah.
They don't value it.
Yeah.
If it drops on the ground, they'll just go get another one. Like
yeah.
they don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, everybody. We are having so much fun and the set fell apart 4 times. So we're going to do a part 2 with Nick because he's been so patient and freaking funny. So make sure you tune in 2 weeks for part 2. Thanks for tuning in. Subscribe so I can finally pay for better equipment. Thank you. Love you guys. See you next time.
I hope everybody listen to my daughter and see it and laughing with her because she is very funny.